The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Radio app, great to have you with us today. No gibberish, no nonsense. I am your Godzilla of the truth in America. Thanks for being with us. We're live at the Commonwealth Hotel at Richmond, Virginia, overlooking, we have this great suite here, overlooking the Capitol grounds. I think everybody's mics are on now, but we're overlooking the Capitol grounds. We're going to be bringing you live coverage from our perch here for 12 hours, starting at 6 a.m. We'll be done at 6 p.m. The only time we will not be on the air is we're going to Steve Bannon live from the Capitol on impeachment from 9 to 10, and then Steve will take over again at 6 p.m. So we got a lot going on today. Our panel today, two of our panelists have shown up. Michael Watson with us, House of Delegates, former House of Delegates member and often guest host of the John Frederick Show. Also, Martha Bonetta. Good morning, Martha.
Good morning, Patriots.
Martha, also a frequent guest host of the John Frederick Show, so she's here. Tom Speciale is with us. He's running for U.S. Senate Republican side. That'll be decided in a June primary. So that's all good. And Emily Brewer is with us, House of Delegates member from the Suffolk area. She's the only millennial that is with us. Amanda Chase will be joining us momentarily. And I want to tell everybody that this segment is brought to you by Scott Taylor for Congress. Scott Taylor running for Congress in the 2nd District. Go to ScottTaylor2020.com. ScottTaylor2020.com. And Scott trying to take back the 2nd District. And he is running in a Republican primary to go up against Elaine Loria. That'll be decided in June. That is a primary. And so more information, you want to go to Scott Taylor. Scott, let me get this straight so I don't give you the wrong one. ScottTaylor2020.com. ScottTaylor2020.com. And we want to thank Scott Taylor for sponsoring this segment. And this message has been paid for and authorized by Scott Taylor for Congress. So let's see. We've got Amanda Chase is joining us. Amanda, you can go right there. If you want to keep your coat on, the windows are open. If you need to close the window, Emily, you're certainly welcome to do that if you're too cold. But let's get everybody in. I think everybody's mic is on. With us is Amanda Chase, Emily Brewer. Let's start with Emily. Emily, what do you think about today?
Today's going to be a good day, John. We've got all of our friends here. We've got law-abiding citizens coming to exercise their First Amendment right in support of their second. We have so many of our friends, our constituents, so many people from across this great Commonwealth coming here to stand up for what they believe in, and it's an exciting day.
Well, thank you. It's also Martin Luther King Day, right? And if there's anything that Dr. King taught us is peaceful demonstrations, to have your voice heard is the best way to change hearts and minds, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? Martin Luther King was famous for his peaceful protest. Peaceful protest through power is so important, and that's what's going to happen today. Peaceful protest with force of power through the people.
Well, that's what it's all about. Also joining us is State Senator Amanda Chase, Republican Chesterfield. Amanda, you have been on the forefront of this issue. You're one of the speakers today. I saw you on Fox News last night after my Titans got beat, and I had to have one stiff three fingers of vodka to get over it. And then I put on Fox News. As soon as I turned it on, whose picture do I see but Amanda Chase?
Well, you know, the Second Amendment is the hot topic item this year. You know, when I was running this past year, I don't know, Emily, if you had this issue too. But this, the gun rights thing is the foundation of every other freedom that we as Americans had. And that's what we talked about during my campaign. We just stayed focused on this is prosperity versus going down the road to socialism. And when you strip law-abiding citizens of their ability to protect themselves, it's a woman's issue, it's a man's issue, it's a Republican issue, it's a Democratic issue, it is an American issue. You know, I have just been blown away as I've gone to these 2A resolution meetings across the Commonwealth, predominantly, you know, in my district, but also outside of the district. Even the Democratic districts have adopted these 2A resolutions and these sanctuary cities. It just completely blew me away. And I'm like, this is an American issue. You know, I don't understand why our Democratic leadership is heading our state off the socialist cliff, because there are Democrats back home that support gun rights. And they are terrified of what the leadership here in the Commonwealth is doing with Governor Northam and, you know, the newly elected Speaker Fillercorn with her Joint Rules Committee.
Caucus of the Corn.
The Caucus of the Corn. That's right.
Thank you.
You know what, John, you really have to think about is what does this mean for everyday people? You know, I think Amanda gets to the point of what it means to people, but just imagine the scenario, right? Just imagine, you know, I live in the country by myself. You know, something happens, say someone tries to break in. I'm 20 to 25 minutes away from a response time. There's no pause button that you get to hit. You know, this is real life scenarios that people are fearful of. In our rural areas especially, you have to imagine that for generations, people have been able to protect their homes and their families. And so this isn't just an issue on a ballot. This isn't just a bill, just another everyday bill. These are people fighting for their lives and to protect their families. And that's a bottom line, and that's real to them. Very, very real.
You know, one of the things that you've got to consider here when we talk about our Second Amendment right, you know, folks that maybe don't want to have firearms, or they don't even think of the Second Amendment as just as much of the Constitution as our First Amendment, our Fourth or Fifth. You know, I'd like to know what people would do if they came here and the governor put a cage around the Capitol and said, okay, I am abandoning your First Amendment rights. Who's going to come in there and not say a word? I mean, this is every bit the same thing. This is just as important. You talked about earlier the Second Amendment. It, frankly, it helps prevent taking away other rights and freedoms that we've got. When you look at some of the legislation that we talked earlier about, the red flag law, I mean, we're hitting on the First, the Second, the Fourth, and the Fifth Amendment right there in one bill. Mm-hmm. And so this goes well beyond just, you know, it's for the folks that are listening that you say, you know, I don't own a firearm, this really doesn't make that much difference to me. Well, folks, it does. It not only here in the Commonwealth, but that's why people are coming here today from all over the country. We've gotten reports. I've met people that are here from outside of the Commonwealth of Virginia. They're not here to cause trouble. They're here to see what's going on here, to try to prevent it here, because they know there's a precursor that's very likely going to show up in their state. And this is not just an attack on an individual's right to bear arms. Clearly, it is, you know, the most direct today. But this is an attack on our Constitution.
Well, you were talking about the red flag law. We're actually debating that on the floor of the Senate today. We've already, sadly, supported or passed three of these anti-American gun law bills. Today we talk about the red flag laws. And the thing that gets me is that if you look at the language in the bill, it says for 14 days you have no due process. So they can totally take your guns from you. This would be like the government allowing people to come in your house, soldiers or whatever, for 14 days for no reason. Now, they'd be invited to my house because I love law enforcement. But the government should not be doing that, right? Any other right? I mean, they're stripping you of, they're taking you of your gun. There's no due process. You haven't gone before a judge. You haven't gone before a magistrate for 14 days. Yep. This is un-American. I mean, this is turning citizens into subjects.
You know, let's talk about the other bills. Red flag has been a big issue, and that's one of the top line talking points that a lot of people are talking about. But some of these other bills are truly egregious, and almost I would even dare say worse. You know, there are bills out there, and Mike, you served in the House, and I know you have a lot to say about this, but the locality ban the locality option ban, just imagine I'm in a rural district. Not every dividing line to each locality is marked appropriately. Just imagine you go from one locality to another. You're driving down 460. You cross from Isle of Wight to Southampton or Southampton to Prince George, and you get pulled over. Oh, wait, is there a handy-dandy guy that says, will I be a felon if I enter that's into right. this county? Think about how egregious that is.
Well, that's one of the problems that we have. You know, I've gone back and looked at this from a business perspective. One of the reasons, you know, that I'm glad that we're a Dillon rule state is there's some consistency across the state. If a business wants to move to Virginia and come in here and say, all right, I want to set up right here, they know what they can expect because of the Dillon rule. We know that if the locality wants to do something unique on their own, they have to go through the General Assembly to do it. When you start putting, Emily, to your point, putting a one law here, this gun's illegal here, or you can't have it in this building, you can't. If you've got no consistency from locality to locality, you're setting people up to get in trouble. And that's why that bill itself is a terrible idea.
One of the things I wanted to bring up as well, because I've had a lot of people inquire from other parts of the country about the second
amendment. If you would, when you speak, because we've got six of us, if you just say your name.
Okay, Martha Bonetta.
Thank you.
Martha Bonetta. So, let's talk a little bit about sanctuary cities. You know, apparently, if I'm not mistaken, 95 of Virginia's counties, is it 22?
136.
And, you know, the people have spoken. Literally, Virginians have been pouring out of local county courthouses, local hearing rooms, pouring out thousands upon thousands of Virginians. The Virginia people have spoken with all of these sanctuary cities. And can we speak about that? You know, Emily.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've been with the president of VCDL at many of these sanctuary cities. The one in Chesterfield.
Can you define what a 2A sanctuary city is? Because we talked a little bit about how people are here from literally all over our nation. I kid you not. It's been an incredible 24 hours hearing from friends from all over the country that want to defend
our Second Amendment rights. Just so everybody knows, when you speak, just say you're Amanda Chase.
All right. This is Amanda Chase.
Thank you.
So sanctuary cities. People are confused about this for one very big reason. We were just against 2A sanctuary. We were just against sanctuary cities for people who are here in our country illegally. Okay, we don't support that because sanctuary is like a safe place. I mean, it makes sense. It's a sanctuary. But these 2A resolution or 2A sanctuary cities, they're safe havens for people who are law-abiding citizens who support the Second Amendment and feel that they need protection from their government. Now, I love what Colonial Heights did. They said, we're not going to mention the word sanctuary because this is already our God-given fundamental right in the U.S. Constitution, in the Virginia Constitution. Why should it be a sanctuary? It is already. They said, we do not want to come from a position of weakness. We want to come from a position of strength. So we are going to reaffirm our rights we already have. And so we're going to create a sanctuary, not a sanctuary city, but we're going to put in a resolution for the Second Amendment saying that we're not going to expend any city resources towards these city resources towards enforcement of any of these anti-constitutional gun-grabbing bills. That's what they've done. And I think that's probably been a great role model. And then you see Tazewell with the militia, gave them the ability to create a militia.
The resolutions that we've seen, the language, they vary across the state. And if you look back at my home in James City County, look at the makeup of the supervisors, I never would have thought that we would have had with some pretty extreme liberal supervisor. It was unanimous, the language they came up with. In Amanda, to your point, they did not mention sanctuary, and frankly, I'm good with that. I'm fine with that.
It
but they did. They made it clear.
They
sent a message, and here's the two things they said. One is we support the Second Amendment, and the other was sending a message to our legislators: do not infringe on the Second Amendment rights of our citizens. And that is the common denominator across all these different resolutions, regardless of the exact language.
Emily, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, John. Yeah, I'll weigh in on that. So I had the opportunity to go to all of the 2A meetings in my district, and I was up in a meeting talking with some of the guys in the audience, and I won't say what county I'm in because I don't want to call them out. But, you know, we were having some pretty deep conversation, and there's a lot of people that felt like that this would never happen in Virginia. We would never go this far. And there's a couple people that readily admitted that they didn't vote. They were running late from work. They got distracted. They got behind. But you know what they did say? They said never again. This isn't a Republican or a Democrat issue. This is a constitutional issue. Mm-hmm. This is our right.
That's exactly right.
this is our right, absolute right. And, you know, there's a lot of people, they've awoken a giant in Virginia.
That's right.
And we've got to keep these people committed and engaged in 2 years so we can fight here again in Virginia. And so that way we can make sure that we remedy this problem here.
John, you asked earlier, so what's next? What's after today? And you hit exactly on that. People have to stay motivated, have to stay activated. If folks, if you're out there listening, all right, I couldn't be at this rally today, but I need to do something. What can I do? You go find friends, neighbors, families, anybody that you can and say, did you vote? And if you did vote, let me tell you why you needed to vote Republican in this last election and why it's so important in the next. If you look in some of the districts, and I look in the state Senate, there's a one vote difference. And when you look at folks like Senator Linwood Lewis, Senator Cree Deeds, Senator Edwards, these are folks that are representing a constituency that are strong pro-Second Amendment constituents. Those folks need to be awoken. They need to know what their legislators voting for, and that'll make a difference. Now, granted, Senate's not back up again until 2023, but you have to stay engaged. If anybody sat at home and did not vote and is now appalled at what's going on, let this be your wake-up call, never again.
I would love to see a grassroots movement of people. This is Amanda Chase. To register people to vote now.
Yes, absolutely.
Start now. I mean, we have an election every year in Virginia. There is no excuse. This should be just like a well-oiled machine. You know, a lot of these GOP groups by county and by city, fantastic people, good people. We have got to actively engage. We are in a war right now for our very freedoms, our basic freedoms, like Second Amendment. And we have to work. We have to go door to door. We have to be creative. And we need to invest in technology to quickly register people to vote. And we need to do it now. And it needs to be continuous.
Yeah. Martha Bonetta, you know, we're here at Jefferson's footsteps, right? And I think the president said it best in his tweet. He said, your Second Amendment is under very serious attack in the great Commonwealth of Virginia. That's what happens when you vote for Democrats. They will take your guns away. Republicans will win in Virginia. Thank you, Dems. I think he properly has said what I think we're all thinking, and that is the reaction that we're seeing all across our Commonwealth with thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Virginians being activated, coming out. I think we're going to see that in the polls, and we need to keep everyone engaged, keep them active, and here today is an opportunity, as Amanda just said, really get that message out.
I think what Martha's saying here, and I want to get Emily and Amanda to weigh in, you're both elected officials and Republicans. The purpose of this is to organize, motivate, and engage people that are not necessarily involved in the political process and to make a statement that if you keep doing this, infringing upon our Second Amendment rights, trampling on the Constitution, that we will organize, we will register to vote, we will show up, and we will vote you out. Other than that, there's no other purpose for this, because you're not going to change the minds of any of the Democrats in there, because they believe, honestly, Emily, they believe that they got elected on a mandate to take your guns away. And this caucus of the corn, which has come in, is the most liberal left-wing group of Democrats ever in Virginia, maybe in the entire country, except perhaps Los Angeles area. I mean, so what other than get new people involved, organize, and mobilize, what other purposes are of this rally?
Well, two things of that, John. So first of all, the big overarching question as we look out over these great Capitol grounds is this. Did the Democratic Party win the House and the Senate in Virginia because they had $68 million? Or did they win on gun control? And after we've seen nearly all the localities in Virginia pass a 2A resolution, I would dare to say it was $68 million. So the next question is, how do we overcome that? First of all, I need to address some people. And if you're listening, if you're not sure how to get involved, reach out to any of your members of the House or the Senate. Please absolutely do so. And don't create the indivisible barrier that you think might be in front of you. I'm an everyday person. Amanda's an everyday person. Mike, Martha, John, all of us that are sitting around this table are everyday people. We're your friends. We're your neighbors. We're not people on a pedestal. We're everyday working class people just like you. If you feel like there's a barrier where you can't reach out and volunteer, you're wrong. There is a place for everybody to get involved, to get to committed, to help us take back the House in 2 years.
Where do they go? Like, one of the frustrating things for me is the Republican Party of Virginia told me they have like three people walking, or five people walking around with clipboards to register people to vote. You got 120,000 and you got five people. Yeah. So, like, okay, this sounds great, but where do they go, Mike? Where do they go, Amanda?
Yeah, what is the call to action?
What is the call to action?
Yeah, what is the call to action? What is your message to the Virginia voters, really the American people? But, you know, the wolves are at the door. What is the call to action?
So here is my call to action. So today I make an announcement. And some of you who were in VCDL's meeting last night got that announcement. I'm calling for the governor to resign as of midnight tomorrow night on a voluntary basis. And if he doesn't, I have a legal team already put together and working with VCDL, and we will recall the governor.
How are you going to do that?
It's going to happen. Trust me.
How many
people always ask me, how do things happen? It will happen. So we're going to give him...
be recalled? That Mike was what? Governor... Gray,
it doesn't matter.
Davis,
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And I will tell you something else. We need to start.
At least it's an action.
Well, yes, we have to act. And, you know, we need to hold our elected officials accountable. But here's the biggest thing. There are so many things packed in this. But I want to address one thing. We swore the first day of session to uphold the U.S. Constitution and the Virginia Constitution. And anybody who violates that has violated that. That's treason. They should be taken out of office. Mm-hmm. All of these people who are voting against restrictions on our Second Amendment, get them out now. And, you know, the problem that I have with, and I'm just going to call it, y'all forgive me, but I'm just honest. We have had a failed Republican Party since at least 2009. And I'll tell you why. Because we do not hold our Republicans accountable to the Republican creed that they ran on. And when they go vogue and they start voting for all these things that are not on that creed, and 2A is the most prevalent, is the most basic foundational right, they should be stripped of that R. The chairman of the Republican Party of Virginia needs to get some. And I'm not talking about Jack Wilson. I'm just saying in general, they need to hold these elected leaders accountable.
There's no Republican Party.
They need to pull them out.
That's an oxymoron.
They lose the R. And until we start doing that, we will never, ever regain our ground. We have got to recapture our brand of being a Republican and what a Republican is. And until we do that, we're going to keep losing. We're going to lose the faith of the people.
Demand the chase for governor, 2021.
So, you know, this
I got to go. Bottom of the hour. Emily, hold that thought. I know it's big, but we got to wait till we get to bottom of the hour news. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. I'm your Godzilla of the Truth in America. We're going to get some of our rally goers involved with Amanda and Emily when I get back. Stay with us. Wall-to-wall coverage of the rally in the perch at the Commonwealth Hotel. Room is packed. Come to the desk. They'll tell you where we are. We'll
January 25th, 1981. The 52 Americans held hostage by Iran for 444 days arrive home in the United States, reuniting with their families at last. 1971. In Los Angeles, Charles Manson and three of his female followers are convicted of murder and conspiracy in the slayings of actress Sharon Tate and six others. 1994. Also in California, pop star Michael Jackson settles child molestation claims out of court, reportedly paying millions of dollars without admitting guilt. In 2003, Jackson is arrested and charged with molesting a child in a separate case. He's acquitted on all counts nearly 2 years later. 1959. The jet age takes off in the United States as an American Airlines Boeing 707 makes the first scheduled transcontinental flight. And 1981. R&B singer Alicia Keys is born in New York City. Today in history, January 25th, Mike Gracia, The Associated Press. In return for grace, it's a beautiful day. Skyfall, you feel that it's a beautiful day.
Yeah. 600, 101.1 FM, WBO.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. China on Monday reported 361 people have died on the mainland from the new virus, with an additional 2,829 new cases over the last 24 hours, bringing the Chinese total to 17,205. The latest figures Monday come a day after the first death from the illness was recorded outside China, in the Philippines, as countries around the world evacuated hundreds of their citizens from the infection zone. Police in London say a man who strapped on a fake bomb and stabbed two people on a London street before being shot to death by police was recently released from prison where he was serving for terrorism offenses. Deputy Assistant Commissioner Lucy Dorsey says that police are confident that the attacker was 20-year-old Sudesh Aman. Dorsey said that the stabbing victim in his 40s, thought to be in life-threatening condition, has improved. More details at srnnews.com.
Thinking about life insurance? Did you know in just a few minutes you can find the best price from up to 10 price competitive companies for free? You can with SelectQuote. For example, George is 39. He was getting sky-high quotes from other companies because he takes meds to control his blood pressure. But when I shopped around, I found him a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $22 a month. I'm SelectQuote agent Dan Savino, and believe me, if SelectQuote isn't shopping for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-494-2323. That's 800-494-2323. 800-494-2323. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds. And most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper at gradsoflife.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-895-8035. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-895-8035. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher for donating. Call now, 1-800-895-8035. That's 1-800-895-8035.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Guess who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
First, though, let's get to one of our callers has been very patient. Get right to Mr. Bo from New Kent. Hey, Bo, you're on the line.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. I'll try to be as brief as possible. This is just in reference to having John Bolton testify in the impeachment trial. To me, now, I haven't seen all the proceedings or listened to it, but I didn't know whether any of Trump's legal team actually read the transcript of Trump's phone call to the American people. And if John Bolton is called, I would read it to him and ask him at times during the reading, have you heard anything about this is all contingent upon setting a meeting up with the president? Have you heard anything about you're not going to get this military aid until you do this investigation? You know, to me, all the phone call is the entire thing. The phone call is the entire reason for all of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's one of those back. I mean, you know, he's entitled to have private conversations mm-hmm. with his advisors. And I just, to me, it's just all up in smoke now, you know. But
well,
that's the whole
like,
basis for
it's
everything.
It's like they want to read his mind. This is why I'm not in favor of, like, releasing the manuscript in some secret room. Right. I would rather Bolton testify and then let's bring in everybody. Let's bring in Biden, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, Adam Schiff. Let's bring them all in. Whistleblowers, son of whistleblower. Drag them all in. You know, reading a manuscript for some guy that just made a book deal, never Trumper warmonger, Dr. Strangelove. Here's the same guy that wanted to invade Venezuela and completely screwed that up before he finally got his can fired. Never should have been hired in the first place, but I'm with you, Bo, on that. You're 100% right,
well,
and thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the
thank
call.
You.
Thank you, Bo. No, thank you. Appreciate it. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Joining us now, Congressman Morgan Griffith, 9th District, Republican, Virginia. That's the Southwest area. Hey, Congressman, great to have you, man.
Great to be with you again. It's good to see you yesterday.
I know. I enjoyed being in your office. I need to do that more. Often we get tied up in our daily stuff and don't get out there a lot. I also got to tell you, I was immeasurably impressed with your chief of staff. I think she said she's been there since the beginning, right, since you took office after winning in 2010, and she's been on the Hill for some time. But, wow, she has just a wealth of knowledge. She's really, really talented lady.
Yes, she is. Very proud to have her on the team.
I know. So, good deal. Your chief of staff, I know she wanted me to mention her name because she likes to stay behind the scenes. But her name is Kelly, and she's really good at what she does. In fact, your host staff, yeah, she said, don't say my name on the radio. So, that means I have to say it. But your host staff, I mean, they're upbeat. You've really put together a fine team in there, and I think it's part of why you're so successful. But it was great being in your office, seeing your op go, and I enjoyed our time together. Now, when you had to depart, you were voting yesterday of fighting with leadership over Merchant Marines and getting them recognized. How did that turn out?
Well, the bottom line is that the Democrats have decided to put an important piece of legislation related to the AUMF onto a Merchant Marine coin bill, which kills the Merchant Marine coin bill. So that has to be repassed. And I was a co-sponsor of that bill, and all we wanted to do was to honor the men and women, and particularly men of World War II, who were in the Merchant Marine at that time, and who suffered as a result of many ships being sunk. A lot of them died. A lot of them were, you know, at sea or had to be rescued. And they were an instrumental part of our war efforts and the British war efforts, and a lot of them died. And this is just to recognize their contribution to our efforts in World War II. And these folks are dying every day because they're old. And they hijacked it in order to try to poke the president in the eye. And that's the problem. I think we need a new AUMF. You and I have discussed that many times. I like the latest language coming out of Tim Kaine's office. I think that makes some sense.
Right.
But this is just an attempt to poke the president in the eye while the Senate is doing the impeachment mess. And it's outrageous. But, of course, it passed on a party line vote. And the Merchant Marines will just have to wait till we get another bill through the whole process again. But it was ready. Had it not been hijacked by Nancy Pelosi and company, that thing could have been on its way to the president's desk for signature, and these folks could have been honored with a gold medal done by the Mint. You have to get enough subscriptions that it doesn't cost the taxpayers any money, but it would have been something that they could have had a ceremony at the Capitol and launched their bid to get the subscriptions, to get the coins out there. And there's lots of folks who collect these types of coins, and we would have been able to sell those. And it doesn't cost the taxpayers anything, honors brave men, and I'm sure there were some women as well, but at that time it was mostly men. And then we just hijacked it for political purposes. Welcome to Washington, D.C. in 2020.
The partisanship is stifling. I mean, you can't get anything done because everything that Democratic leadership does is designed to in some way hurt the president. And so, I mean, what you described to me yesterday with the Merchant Marines, I mean, it made perfect sense. Everybody's for it. And so they can't even get that passed because they don't want to give the president a victory on something else. Or, as you say, they want to poke him in the eye so you can't get anything done. I mean, the vitriol that goes on. I've been here a long time. I've never seen anything like it is now, ever. And I'm not sure until you take the House back, I'm not sure that this will ever stop. I mean, if Trump gets reelected, which I think he will, and somehow the Democrats maintain the gavel in the House, this is going to go on, right?
I fear that it will. There is a segment of the Democrats in the House who just will not accept that President Trump got elected, particularly since he beat their favorite, Hillary Clinton. And it's just, it is amazing. Look, I didn't like the policies of President Obama, but I certainly didn't try to undermine policies, but I certainly didn't try to undermine him personally or start campaigns for impeachment.
Right.
And they started those campaigns before the president was elected, as you know. And there has been a drumbeat behind the scenes for some time, and I believe Nancy Pelosi finally succumbed to those who wanted to go through the impeachment process because the far left was making primary challenges against many of her lieutenants.
Right. And so she had no choice, and now they're stuck with it. So, look, in the closing arguments yesterday, White House lawyers basically were asking senators to just acquit the president, said they didn't have anything on him. But in a closed-door meeting, we understand from various news networks and other sources out there, people I talked to last night, apparently Senate Majority Leader McConnell told his caucus that he didn't have the votes to stop witnesses, which means there's at least four Republicans that are going to go with Schumer in calling John Bolton and other witnesses. What happens now?
Well, I mean, the Senate gets to make the rules, but the bottom line is that I think that's a mistake unless they call all the witnesses, and this thing will drag on for quite some time. There is a problem out there, and look, I know that the Republican senators are going to take a beating no matter what they do. Mm-hmm. And there is a policy, and I think Dershowitz said it in his statements, that, you know, even if you accept the rumors of what Bolton is supposed to have said in his book, if every bit of that's true, you still don't have an impeachable offense. And, you know, if you bring a court case to court that on its face there is no charge, or there is, I mean, okay, that's great, that happened, but that's not a crime.
Right.
You can throw that out on a motion before you hear any witnesses. The judge has the authority to do that. The in this case, the Senate is the judge. They're the trier of fact. And throw this out because there's nothing that is an impeachable offense. You can disagree whether you think it was right or wrong. That's another story. By the way, let me scratch an itch, if I might, for a minute.
Sure.
I am so sick and tired of hearing media reports stating it as a fact that, you know, it has been widely distributed, or it is well known that the Bidens didn't do anything wrong. No, that's not true. That's mm-hmm. absolutely clear Joe Biden did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Was he criminal? There's a distinction between having done something criminal and something wrong. I don't know whether Joe Biden did anything criminal. I think there needs to be an investigation. I don't know whether Hunter Biden did anything criminal. There needs to be an investigation. But Joe Biden had a clear conflict of interest with his son being involved with Burisma, and he stopped the investigation. He had the prosecutor fired. Clear conflict of interest. And I don't know anybody who has studied conflicts who wouldn't say he had a conflict of interest, and him carrying the message, if it was the right message, you know, if that was the right policy for the United States, that's fine. But under no circumstances should he have been the person who carried the message to Ukraine to fire that prosecutor, because even if it was correct, he had a conflict of interest and his behavior was wrong. He did something wrong. And I'm tired of the reporters across the country saying, and Joe Biden didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And if he were a lawyer, he'd lose his license over that.
Well, Congressman.
In my opinion.
Congressman, look, yeah. I mean, he was the point person for President Obama. The directed point person for the president on Ukraine and China. Just so happens that his son, Hunter Biden, who's had a myriad of issues, got thrown out of the Navy, drugs, whatever he's done, he had to pay for that, had no experience, does a deal with the Chinese Communist Bank for $1.5 billion for a hedge fund, had no experience in finance, gets $1.5 billion from the Bank of China. Then Joe Biden, as vice president in charge of Ukraine policy, gets a prosecutor fired when they're going to investigate his son, who was getting $55,000 a month to sit on a board of directors of a gas company, of which he had no experience in the region, no experience in the business, no experience with the competitors, had never done anything. Why was he there? What was his job? He was getting $55,000 a month, and his father fires a prosecutor, and he's vice president in charge of that policy. You know, there's nobody that can look at that and say that's not, at the very least, it's swampomania, right? Now, you know, the problem the Democrats have, Congressman, is if we go down the witness path, and I don't want to because this thing is going to go on forever. If we go down the witness path, what happens, right? The Republicans are going to call Biden, Hunter Biden, whistleblower. I mean, I don't even know, where does this end if they go down this path?
Well, you know, I think what they ought to do is call Hunter Biden, let him take the fifth. Now, let me say this. I can make a defense for Hunter Biden. If somebody wants to pay me money and they're being stupid to pay me for something that they're not going to get from me, I don't see anything particularly wrong with that.
That's not illegal,
but,
right?
But the problem was when his father stepped in, mm-hmm. that's where the problem came up. Look, if people want to be dumb and hire me to do something that I'm not qualified to do, and I say, look, I don't have any experience, I didn't bib to them, and they say, we want to give you the $50,000 a month anyway, it's suspicious, but under those circumstances, his father should have stayed away from it. He should have never gotten involved in it. He should have said to the president, I can't deal with Ukraine because my son is over there and they're investigating him. Send the Secretary of State to do it. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Or when he found himself in that situation, he should have said, I've got to back away right now. Mm-hmm. This is a problem.
Right.
He used bad judgment, and Joe Biden made a mistake. He did something wrong. Was it criminal? That's a different issue. And I don't know whether they broke any laws in Ukraine. You know what? Maybe they ought to investigate.
Well,
and they can figure it out.
And I think if they call John Bolton based on hearsay manuscript. I think they need to call Hunter Biden, Joe Biden. Let them all plead the fifth. Go ahead. They need to call them.
Plead the fifth, fine.
Call them all.
Because if they plead the fifth, then it's pretty clear something's going on.
Right.
And exactly. Maybe there does need to be an investigation. I mean, right. I just don't see any problem with that. I think Schiff needs to come in and testify. And here's the bottom line. You know, they're talking about this. Some people have been talking about this one-for-one deal. No, the Democrats already got 17 witnesses. We didn't get anybody that we absolutely wanted in the House.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 17-0 right now. Give us 17 witnesses before you get the first Democrat witness.
I kind of agree with that. You're on the John Frederick's Radio Network, live from your nation's capital, Washington, D.C. We're with Republican Congressman Morgan Griffith, 9th District, Virginia, that Southwest Virginia area. Okay, so it looks like we're getting testimony. McConnell yesterday saying, look, I don't have the Republican votes in order to stop it. We know three are voting for it, Collins, Mitt Romney, and Murkowski, so they got one other one. Name hasn't been mentioned, but it appears it's probably Lamar Alexander, somebody I've heard that can't confirm it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard.
That's so disappointing. You know, maybe they need to put some feelers out and have some discussions with Joe Manchin in West Virginia and that fellow from Alabama. Because, you know, I can't imagine this is good for them, for this thing to be lingering on.
I don't think so either. They ought to vote no. Now, we understand that there's potentially three Democrats that, if the vote were held today, are going to vote for acquittal. Kirsten Sinema in Arizona, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, and Doug Jones in Alabama. That's what I heard last night, if the vote was held today. But it isn't going to be held today or tomorrow because we're now going to go forward, drag this out with witnesses. Okay, now let's get to – you get a briefing today from the CDC, right? I heard at 9:45 on this Chinese virus.
Yeah, the times are all being moved around. So we're going to try to figure out how we get – we'll get a briefing from somewhere, yes.
And what have you heard, Congressman, up to now on – the spread of this virus?
Well, it seems to be spreading fairly quickly in China. You know, they have so many people packed into those cities. Those cities are oftentimes have greater populations than most of our states, and so it makes it much easier for a virus when it mutates. This is a virus that came from animals. They actually think it may have come from bats to snakes to humans. They actually eat snakes in China, and they have live markets where they sell the snake live, and then mm-hmm. somebody takes it home and eats it. And they think that's how it got transmitted to humans, but now it's human-to-human transmission. And in those packed conditions in China, it's just ripe to take off. We need to be very careful. The Chinese are trying to be careful. The president has offered to give the Chinese assistance wherever we can to try to contain this thing. And we'll just have to see where we go. But it is of great concern. Because of our world economy and our transportation system that we have in the world today, these diseases can move fairly quickly around the globe. Mm-hmm. Not just here. I think we're taking some pretty good precautions. We can probably do better. But, you know, then you have to think about what's going on in Africa, where the Chinese have a lot of business deals. They're building coal-fired power plants over there in Africa, left and right. So it's something we need to keep an eye on, and hopefully the Chinese will continue their quarantines and continue to make sure that people who have the disease are treated and kept in their cities. But it does have great potential. Not everybody dies who gets it. It's not that severe, but there's a significant percentage that do die, and that's why it's a concern.
John Frederick's Radio Network. Congressman, we have another about a minute and a half. I'll be at the White House today for the president's signing of USMCA. Finally, we're getting this done. What is it going to mean to Virginia? Jobs.
Well, in Virginia, it's going to be huge across the board. I mean, it's just going to be a lot of jobs. In my district, it's going to be mostly agricultural. Advantages and opportunities, maybe some textiles. It'll be high-tech type of manufacturing if we get any of that. but it definitely will be helpful to the farmers who can greatly use that assistance.
So jobs in Virginia, jobs across the United States. Some people have estimated, I think it was the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, estimated that once this thing is in full swing, that the country's GDP could go up by a full percent. Now, obviously, China's not going to buy everything that they can right now in the China Phase 1 deal because of the flu and the virus going on. But the USMCA has nothing to do with China. This is Mexico and Canada, and there's a lot of goods and services that are going to move. So it could go up, Stephen Mnuchin saying, GDP by 1%. So it's going to make quite a difference both in our region, in the Mid-Atlantic region of Virginia, and also across the United States. The only downside of this thing is we should have been at the signing ceremony January 29th of 2019. This thing was stalled for 12 months for nothing other than not to give the president a win. That's really sick.
Well, unfortunately, that's just the way things are right now. We're trying to make progress where we can, but it is being blocked oftentimes actually in the speaker's office. As I've told you before, our Committee on Energy and Commerce has worked on a number of items that have been bipartisan, only to find that they were blocked by leadership, and they said, no, we're going a different direction. And that's a shame, because the Committee of Jurisdiction ought to be able to work its will, and you know, we're charged with learning these issues, and leadership blocks it. But it's been that way for the last year, and it will continue if the Democrats remain in control, unfortunately.
Well, here's the way to stop it. Re-elect President Trump in 2020, and elect a Republican Congress with a Republican majority in the House, and then you're really going to see how you get things done. Congressman, we're out of time. Thank you for being with us. I always enjoy your perspective. Thank you.
You're listening to the John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. Online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
February 1st, 2003.
Communication was lost with the Space Shuttle Columbia at 8 a.m. Central Time.
For the second time in nearly two decades, a space shuttle mission ends in tragedy. Space Shuttle Columbia breaks up during reentry, killing all seven crew members on board. President George W. Bush tells their grieving families,
"You're not alone. Our entire nation grieves with you. And those you loved will always have the respect and gratitude of this country."
1968, one of the most searing images of the Vietnam War, caught by Associated Press photographer Eddie Adams. The police chief in South Vietnam's capital, Saigon, executes a Viet Cong officer with a pistol shot to the head during the Tet Offensive. 1979, ending nearly 15 years in exile, Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini arrives in Tehran to a tumultuous welcome. He becomes the country's supreme leader as an Islamic fundamentalist regime replaces the deposed Shah of Iran. And 1901.
There's one thing I do know, is that I love you, Scarlett. In spite of you and me and the whole silly world going to pieces around us, I love you.
Actor Clark Gable, the silver screen leading man best known for his role as Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind, is born in Ohio.
Don't hold
Today
me
in
like
history,
that.
February 1st, Charlotte. Carlotta Bradley,
Look
The Associated
me.
Press.
I love you more than I've ever loved.
I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good, good night. I feel it. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night.